Rewards programs are a lot like pop culture. They can be hard to keep up with. But with Venmo's new rewards program, Venmo Stash, rewards are so easy because the more you do, the more you get. And you choose the bundle of brands you get cash back at. It's giving fiscal queen. It's giving star. It's giving up to 5% cash back at your favorite brands. Just pick a bundle of your go-to spots to shop with your Venmo debit card and earn cash back at them. Do more, get more with Venmo Stash. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. Tim and I wanted to start off with that to our own fathers. Happy Father's Day. And also to all of you mothers that are working in dual capacity roles, that are working both as a mother and a father to your children. Congratulations for doing a fantastic job and happy Parents' Day to you. And what's the right politically correct name for that, Tim?
Let's go with that. Happy Parents' Day, sure.
Happy Parents' Day. Sure. And especially to our fathers who've been a huge influence into both of our lives. And we've been lucky enough to have fathers and father figures in our lives that have really helped to shape who we are as people. So now you know who to blame for Tim and I.
That's right.
all right. We did an interesting show last week, Tim, mm-hmm. where we had a guest on who wasn't polished. She didn't have a book to sell, a documentary to push. She right. didn't have anything along those lines. And, you know, part of the idea of the show is, you know, trying to keep it fresh, trying to bring you different people that have had different aspects of the paranormal affect their life.
Correct.
And, you know, on Midnight in the Desert, I talked to a lot of those guests. So those are the authors and the researchers and the documentarians. And we don't really get a chance to talk to the common folk, Tim.
The common little folk, people, you say.
Right? Mm. We don't get to talk to a lot of the people out there that are actually in the mix.
The trenches.
These experiences.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And I've had a gentleman who's been writing to me for the better part of a year, and I've been waiting for the right time to kind of have him come in and share his stories. Because, again, this guy has been dealing with a lot over a long period of time. And I thought it'd be kind of an interesting bookend to last week's episode. This gentleman's a little bit more forthright with coming out with his information and has actually begun sharing many of his stories and insights on a YouTube channel. And we'll put up a link to that as well with today's show so that you can find it more easily. But there is, you know, there's so much information and experiences this guy's had. Again, it leaves you questioning, why do some people have these type of experiences when others don't? And some people, it's one-offs. You know, I walked in and I was at my grandmother's house and saw the ghost of my grandfather, and that's really their experience. But then there are other people who seem to be a magnet that draw the attention of the other side to them. Be it ghosts, aliens, cryptids, black-eyed kids, and more. It's interesting that some people are like a lightning rod to that. Why do you think, Tim, why do you think it affects some people so, you know, passionately, while others might just have fleeting glances of that?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. I think, one, some people are definitely maybe not only more open to it psychologically and more open to it belief wise, but I think also, I believe it or not, Dave, I think there's a genetic opening to it as well. I think and it may seem like a weird theory, but I think throughout the years, I think some people are more predisposed genetically to be open to the paranormal too, much like some people are, or I know I'm getting into El Campanis and Jimmy the Greek territory here, but I think some people are more genetically predisposed to be open to the paranormal as well. I think some people might just be naturally shut down to the paranormal. I truly do believe, much like allergies, put it that way, that some people maybe just can't open up to that realm. And it much like a physical block, you know, they can't get through and they can't access that realm. Much like some people are tone deaf and can't sing or can't play an instrument, I think there's some people that just can't access the paranormal. And in that, I think there are some people who are virtuosos and just have no problem reaching over to that other side or attracting things from the other side and being able to access it.
Joining us now, a guest, we'll only refer to him by one name. It's not because he's like Cher or Bono, Tim, but because he does try to lead a regular life as well. Uh-huh. And although he has a YouTube channel talking about his stories, for a long time he was very secretive and kind of masked his face while he told these stories, with good reason. You know, when you're coming out with this kind of information, you don't necessarily want everybody to know who you are, what you look like, because you don't want to be judged. We've talked to people like Andrea Perrin, Christopher Lutz from the Amityville House, Andrea from The Conjuring, Carmen Reed from The Haunting in Connecticut, even Lisa Weirich from The Haunting in Georgia. We've talked to these people and we've heard how it's affected their lives by being forthright about this. So our guest has gone a long way to try to protect his own identity for quite a while. He's now removed the mask on his YouTube channel and is becoming more open about this. But still, in order to protect his anonymity to a degree, we'll just refer to him by the name Giovanni today on the show. He is what he believes to be an empath and a clairvoyant, and believes that that may be what draws so much of this to him. So please welcome to Beyond the Darkness, Giovanni. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, how's it going, you guys? I'm a big fan of your show.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. And I appreciate you reaching out and being willing to come out. And like I said, we've been on and off in contact for the last year. And I've been waiting for that right time to bring you in and chat, because I think there is something really powerful about hearing from people who are having everyday experiences. And this certainly has been a big part of your life. Around what age were you, Giovanni, when things began to really show themselves that you were involved in a very paranormal world?
In my, in about 4 years old, early on, starting at 4 years old, it was before I was in kindergarten, I started to get hit really hard with a lot of paranormal stuff. And it just happened so often from, you know, four up until I'm almost 40 now, and I just constantly have stuff happen over and over and over again.
And what were those first experiences like for you?
Well, you know, when you're 4 years old, you know, you don't know anything. You don't know really good or bad. You're still, you know, a child. Your brain hasn't developed yet. And it just started with me. I used to get visited by shadow entities. And I know everybody has heard of the Hat Man. I used to get visited by a shadow, big shadow figure like that. I used to refer to him as the Spy versus Spy Guy. I don't know if you remember that video game. Like,
sure,
Hat,
right.
Yeah. And I would have him come in my room and stand at the edge of my bed when I was little. And he would have red eyes or blue eyes sometimes. And I remember he had like a Zorro hat. And he would have these like little shadow guys with him. And have you ever seen the Olympics? They have a person that runs around with like a stick with a long like bow connected to it. And they do all kinds of fancy like twisting and twirling with it. You know what I'm talking about?
Right. Like with the ribbon kind of
Like, so I'll, exactly. So this Hat Man thing, I don't even like to call it that because it sounds so generic and like mainstream. But this shadow entity would stand there and he would have these like ridden figures, shadow figures, and they would jump all around my room, and then they would go inside of my body, and they would paralyze me. And it got to where, I mean, this was happening every night, and it got to where they would go into my body, and they would go to certain parts of my body, and it got to where I couldn't breathe. Like, I would feel like something was trying to, you know, stop me from breathing, and the shadow entity would just stand at the edge of my bed, and his eyes would usually be red. And it, a few times I thought I was going to die because I couldn't breathe. And that was just kind of the beginning of all of it. And what I would do after this started happening, I started to make like a dummy person, and I would put it in my bed, and I would, you know, find a hiding spot at night and hide. My parents didn't know about it, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but it got to where, you know, these things were, they were hurting me, like you know, they were stopping me from breathing, and I was paralyzed, and this big shadow entity thing with a hat, like a Zorro hat, it was calling the shots, it looked like, and that was kind of the first thing that happened to me, and this happened all the way up until I was in kindergarten. And so, yeah, that was the first thing. But you know,
would they ever try to communicate with you verbally or telepathically, or was it just this kind of, you know, visual spectrum that you'd see them in?
It was mostly visual, but I remember those little shadow entities. One time, it sounded like three voices talking over each other, like a radio announcer talking about it, like a football game, like they're on the 20, they're on the 30, it's a touchdown. But it was like in a language I've never even heard before. And they would be talking over each other. And then as soon as they would go into like my nostrils, or they would go in through my belly button, or they would go in through my mouth, and then it would stop and it'd be dead silence and I would be paralyzed. And I just remember looking up at the, you know, the big shadow hat man entity, and I was 100% paralyzed. And like I said, it got to where it felt like they would go into my lungs or my esophagus and try to close it. And, you know, this would happen. And if I didn't stay calm when this was happening, I was going to suffocate. And so I got used to like battling with this thing, and it came into my house like almost every night. And like I said, I ended up, you know, putting a dummy in my bed, and I would hide. And it was really hard because it caused me a lot of sleep deprivation. And when you're 4 years old, you know, like I was spooked out of everything. Like I wouldn't sleep at nighttime, and then during the day, I would think about what happened to me. And you know, I was just always weirded out because of what happened to me. And I just would never sleep, and it just got to where it was affecting my life, and I wasn't even in kindergarten yet, you know, and I was already like battling with these shadow entity things. I don't even know what they were, and I could never talk to anybody about it because I didn't even know how to describe it. So I, like I said, I would just hide, and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But
now, you didn't talk to your parents about this when it was going on?
The reason I had a really, really, really rough upbringing. My mom was a heavyweight champion meth addict as far back as I can remember. My dad was kind of a rough character. And I think that might have played a role in attracting a lot of that stuff to my house. But like my mom, I also believe, was possessed. I know she had mental problems. And if anything, she attracted that stuff. But as far as talking to them about it, when I was little, I was real quiet and shy, and I felt real uneasy around everybody, especially my parents. And my mom just was not somebody that you can talk to about that. She would, you know, it just wouldn't register to her, you know.
Right. And do you think, out of curiosity, Giovanni, do you think that it was the activities of your mom and that kind of lifestyle that might have been bringing some of this darkness into your world?
Well, when I got older, like, I've never read books or studied on this. I just kind of observed my life, you know. And of course, when I got older, I realized that my mom, I don't think she directly was bringing this on, but indirectly, of course, it was coming to her. And there's a lot of things about my mom. Like, my mom was cancer, you know. Everything she touched, you know, died. And if you were around her, something bad happened. Like, always, you know, just every time I was around her or with her, something bad would happen. And I'm pretty sure from my experiences and experiencing this that she indirectly drew this on, you know, onto me. And because I was young, I've learned that these entities, especially if they're bad or evil, they take advantage of, you know, weaker people. And when you're 4 years old and you're not developed and your brain doesn't work like an adult, it's real easy to, you know, do whatever it is they're doing. I just knew when it was happening. Oh, go ahead.
That brings up an interesting point, and please take no offense to this, but it's something I know a portion of our audience will be jumping on at this, you know, at this moment. Your mom and dad don't sound like the best caretakers on planet Earth.
No.
You were young, you were impressionable. Is there any chance that what you believed you were experiencing might be a psychological break, and you may be remembering something one way when maybe it was a form of abuse another way, and that's the way you compensated? Have you spoken to any mental health advocates or doctors about this to see if there's anything that, you know, maybe is more rooted in
yeah.
I hate to use the word reality because then it makes me
sound like
I'm calling you out, but I mean, it might be something that your brain is masking what really took place with this.
Well, that's, I have like kind of sort of like scratched the surface, but that the thing with like my parents and stuff were, they were never hands on. Like I don't even remember having like a conversation with my parents throughout my entire life, like a normal, like you and I are having right now. And, like I was mentally and physically abused, like violence. As far as I can remember, unless something happened to me when I was a baby, I'd never have anything sexual or, you know, like, you know, the weird uncle come by and do something. Everybody was real hands off when it came to me. And so just cause I, like I said, I've sat down and I've talked about this with some people and stuff, and just the reason why I don't think it was something suppressed or something that could have happened to me that I was, you know, psychologically interpreting as a hat man and shadow entities is because no one even paid attention to me. I was left pretty much on my own as far back as I can remember, you know. So anybody taking time out to abuse me, that would infringe on, you know, their partying, or, you know, it would slow them down, you know. And
right. No, I get your point.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, was your mother addicted to drugs during her pregnancy?
That's the thing. I was told she wasn't. And cause I've talked to some of my relatives about my mom and stuff. And they said ever since she was, you know, a child, she had mental problems and there was always, you know, weird stuff with her. And, you know, but as far as I know, I she wasn't doing drugs. I was born in 1979 and that didn't really take hold until, like, you know, the 80s and stuff, like the late 80s. But it's, you know, I just remember her doing drugs when I was like 4 or 5 years old. But as far as, you know, doing it when I was pregnant, I don't think, maybe she did. I just think she was just a bad seed. And I think she was perfectly possessed. Like, she didn't know she was possessed, but she didn't care she was possessed. And she had, you know, I've got some stories about like incidents I've had with her. And I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about on the radio show, about like, what can I talk about on here? I'm not going to cuss or anything, but I want to tell a story about her that is when I kind of realized she was possessed. Is that okay to do, or is that
on a paranormal show? Hell no, we don't have time for that, Giovanni. Let's get to cupcakes. Let's talk about cupcakes. Yes, of course you can talk about the time was possessed. All right, go ahead.
So I'm getting visited, like I said. I don't like to call it the hat man because that sounds stupid. I was getting visited by this shadow entity, and he was bringing these little things that were paralyzing me, and they were strangling me. Sometimes I felt like I was being, like, I don't know, sodomized. I've never been sodomized, but I'm saying, like when I was laying there, it would feel like something was choking me and doing something to me sexually. And like I said, it's nothing ever happened to me that I know of unless something happened as a baby. And like I said, my parents weren't creeps. They weren't like chomos, but they were just rough cookies, you know?
Right. But
one night when I was a little bit older, I don't know where my dad was, but my mom, like I said, she would, she was a strange cat. My grandma and great grandma were of Jewish descent, but they secretly were into like tarot cards, and like my grandmas would, people would come to them and give them a ring, and they would hold on to it, and they would tell you about, like, past lives of the person that had this ring. They were kind of psychic clairvoyants, but because they were Jewish, they were undercover about it because it kind of messed up, doesn't coincide together. And so I remember my mom had these homemade tarot cards that my great-grandma made. And I remember she would always sit and play them, like, in the dark with a little light on and do them. And they were a deck of playing cards. They were, like, bright blue, and they had, like, an oven drawn on them, like a print of an oven. And on the back, my grandma would type something with a typewriter under the cards. And these cards are, like, 80, 90 years old. And one night she was playing with them, like, in the dark with the light on, and I was just kind of, like, tripping out on the energy in the room. Was really weird, like a real heavy energy, like you couldn't breathe in there. And so I go in my room to go to sleep, and I'm sleeping, and I wake up to my mom standing in the doorway, and her, like, and I know this sounds crazy, I was maybe about five, but her eyes, like when you say the black eye kids, her eyes were black, but not the eyeball, but on the outside of her eyes she had like a cloudy black circles over her eyes, and her head was hanging down, her mouth was open, and she was talking, but her mouth wasn't moving. And I was like looking at her all freaked out, and she was standing there, she had a shirt on, like going down, you know, just a little bit past her, you know, private areas, and she's bleeding, like bleeding really bad from her her, you know, her private area, but I can't see it. I just see blood dripping all over the place. And I'm just looking at her going like, what the hell? And she's standing there and she goes, Giovanni, I need you to help me. But her mouth isn't moving. And I'm like watching this going, what the hell? And I'm ready to jump out the window, but I see all this blood. And I stand up. I'm like, what's wrong? And she goes, please help me. Please help me. And I'm looking at her mouth. It's not moving. And she's bleeding. And back then I didn't know about women having like menstrual cycles or anything. So I think my mom's bleeding out. And next thing I know, we're like in the bathroom and the lights are kind of on and she's bleeding everywhere. And she like can't move her mouth. Her eyes are solid black. And I remember looking down at her feet and she didn't have any feet. Like she was like floating there.
Ooh.
And yeah. And there's blood everywhere. And I've never told anybody this, but like, she kept going, please help me, please help me, please help me. And I'm like, holy shit, oh, holy crap. And then she ended up turning around, leaving the bathroom. And then I went back to my room. But I mean, I know for a fact that it wasn't her, you know what I mean? And there was nothing weird or sexual about it. It was just, she just appeared in my doorway and she had like these black clouds over her eyes. And I remember like, they looked almost smoky and, and she just looked like she was dead and something was holding her up and her head was hanging down, but she was talking perfectly. And I'll never forget that.
But she was talking, without moving her mouth. She was more telepathically reaching out to you.
Yeah. But she wasn't looking at me. She wasn't paying attention to me. Her body wasn't moving. And when she moved out of the room, like I said, it was like someone had her, you know, was holding her up and kind of like moved her and then took her down to the bathroom. And I'm following her like going, what the heck? You know, you're bleeding to death. And she just kept going, I need you to help me. Please help me. Please help me. And I remember going like,
that's horrifying.
It was horrifying. And I never told anybody that because most people would go, oh, that's sexual or something. You got to say they had nothing
I get
to do
you.
With that.
It was, this was something. And I don't even pick up on the fact that this was something of a sexual nature. This just seemed like a dark entity trying to take on a familiar form to get your attention and get you coming in. Wow, that is, I gotta be honest with you, Giovanni. I've heard a lot of stories. And Tim, I don't know where you come in on this, but I hear a lot of stories, but that's one that had all the arm hairs standing straight up on end.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Giovanni, that's terrifying. All right, Giovanni, again, I don't think I'm completely over that story and a little nervous to go on with the rest of them, but I'm here, you're here, let's get this thing done.
All right.
Tim, you've heard a lot now. Mm-hmm. I've kind of weighed in on some of my thoughts. Do you have any input at this point or question for Giovanni before we move into some of his other experiences? We're still at a very young age for Giovanni yet.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know that I have so much questions. I guess a good healthy skeptic would say, you know, even at a young age, you would say, well, are you sure childhood doesn't kind of color the memory here a little bit?
Right.
But other than that, no, I don't. I'm kind of anxious to hear what else he has to dish out here.
All right. So this was your experience. Did you talk to anybody about that? Well, my voice is cracking like Peter Brady. I'm so uncomfortable right now. Did you talk to anybody about that specific event after it occurred?
No,
or again, was this something you kept to yourself?
I kind of kept to myself. I was like, I've been told I'm an old soul, like, you know, like, and I've always been really mature for my age, and I had to grow up really fast because of a lot of bad stuff I went through. And I have a photographic memory, and I realize, you know, stuff that I remember, because people go, how do you remember that when you were four? And I would tell them, and this isn't from reading books or going to school, I would just say, you know, these things were so traumatic, you know, that I took a picture of it. And then on top of that, you know, I had a photographic memory, and I was very mature for my age. You know what I mean? Like, when you're, you know, I've escaped, you know, kidnappings at, you know, 4.5, 5 years old, you know, things like that. And I grew up in my, you know, my brain was advanced, and I just never would talk to people about this because I knew what I saw, but I just always, my whole life, I've always think about these things and always think, like, man, like, where was my protection? You know what I mean? Like, you know, when people go, oh,
right,
you know, God will protect you, or this will happen. And I remember somebody telling me, God will never put you through anything more that you can't handle, or whatever you can handle, God will, that's it. You know, he'll put the release valve on if it gets too bad. And I remember at 4 or 5 years old, I would think that as some of the stuff was happening, but I knew that, like I said, I didn't watch movies or anything like that and know about the stuff. This was 1984, you know, we didn't have internet or anything, but I just knew that this was, you know, paranormal stuff, and it was not good stuff, because a lot of people go, oh, it could be the angels, and that this was bad stuff doing, you know, like, doing bad stuff to me, you know,
right,
like, so they're trying to scare me to death, or...
You okay, have these shadowy figure encounters. You have this weird moment where I don't even know if that's your mother possessed. I mean, I'm not picking up on that. Were you, Tim, that this was a possessed mom? I mean, he's seeing her floating, no legs. I just feel like whatever this force was taking her likeness to try to get your attention.
Right.
I don't know, Tim. Yeah. Do you see a different perspective on that?
No, I don't see a possessed mom either. Yeah. No.
Yeah. It doesn't mean, and I guess, you know what? I take that back. I know... there's a book called Satan's Harvest that covers one of the Ed and Lorraine Warren's cases that really stuck with me and impacted me. It's very creepy. This guy was very possessed, and there were versions of him that would be seen, these doppelganger versions. So maybe it is kind of a bilocation, or maybe it was even your mother's soul crying out for help locked within the physical form. You know, I've talked to people like, you know, Adam Bly and John Zaffis, and a few that have kind of related similar stories. And I wonder if it was her trying to come to you. And, you know, they say the eyes are the window to the soul. Maybe that's why they were so cloudy looking, is that whatever this thing was, it was trying to keep you from making that real connection. But again, by showing the blood and everything else, it may have been trying to distract you from the message and just terrify you. I don't know.
Man.
A lot of this is speculation. I know. It's so hard to wrap my head around. Okay, so this all takes place while you're very young, and continues on during all of this time. Are you ever in any physical danger from these entities and energies, or is it always just something that's more psychological, mind screw kind of stuff?
Well, at first it was kind of like a psychological mind screw. And then, like I said, when these shadow things would jump into me and paralyze me, like I said, I remember it would come down to where I would be in a panic trying to move. And then all of a sudden I would feel like something was closing my airways, and then I would have to calm down. And I got really good at battling these things, because I realized, you know, I'm gonna stop breathing if I keep freaking out and moving. And that shadow entity guy would just stand there and watch me. And, you know, as time went on, you know, things started to get, probably when I was about 5 years old, I started to like, you know, like I would have scratches on my face, or in people, you know, nobody was doing it to me, or I'd have scratches on my back, or I used to have black eyes a lot. And, what was happening was these things, like things started hitting me and attacking me at night. And it was, man, it was just so terrifying. Cause like, I remember like I was a loner, but I would be like in my room by myself, avoiding everybody, and you know, I would get hit in the face, or I'd get scratched, or like something would happen, and you know, and then everybody would think like, "Oh, you're doing this to yourself," or "This is happening." And then after, you know, things like that started happening, really bad things would happen to me. Like one time I was with my mom, and she threw me out of the car in kind of a desolate area and drove off, and somebody tried to kidnap me. And I escaped the kidnapping, and you know, and I ran away and got away and stuff. But when I kind of realized I was kind of a little bit psychic, in that, you know, I was able, when I almost got kidnapped, I saw the whole thing happen before my mom threw me out of the car. That's how I knew where to run to, what to do.
Oh, so you had a moment of precognition as well.
Oh man, like it was insane. Yeah, my mom threw me out of the car one time, and like 4.5, 5 years old, and before the guy even got there, I saw, you know, a guy in a red car pull up. I saw him get out and try to grab me, and I saw myself run to a house and, you know, almost run into their house and knock on the door. And then as I'm like picturing all this stuff happening, here comes a red car, you know, a young guy, like 25, 30 years old. He gets out of the car, a healthy guy, you know, and somehow, some way he wasn't able to catch me. You know, so it was like something intervened and was able to make, you know, a five-year-old child move like, you know, Jackie Joyner courtesy. But I saw the whole thing happen. And I just remember, like, all the paranormal stuff that started happening to me, a lot of times I would have a precognition and I would see it happening before it did. And then it got to where I wasn't so scared. I mean, I was scared, but I was ready for it, you know, and I had a plan, and I was always ready to, I always knew where to go, you know, like I always had my escape routes and safety zones planned out, you know, because of, you know, one time I got attacked in the shower, you know, and I knew where to run to, you know, and just things like that would happen, but I would have these precognitions before they would happen. And the older I got, the more I was able to see, you know, these things happen before they actually did. And that's when I started to realize I had a little bit of a intuitive, clairvoyant, you know, ability.
Now you've talked about more of the spiritual crazy plane that would visit you. You also had mentioned in your email something about alien intervention or abduction. At what point in your life did that begin to happen?
That was when, okay, the first alien abduction thing I ever had was, and like, you got to understand, I'm not into any of this. Like, I don't study paranormal. I don't study alien stuff. Like, to me, it's kind of boring to read about and watch shows. So I wasn't like, I didn't put all this stuff in my head. I knew what aliens were, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't like into it and looking for spaceships. But when this started happening with the alien thing, I was probably about 17, and, I was sleeping like out in like a trailer, like, you know, one you hook on your truck and go camping with. And it's embarrassing to say, cause it sounds so cheesy, but I woke up and I was something paralyzed me. And there were three, like, you know, those gray looking alien things with the big eyes, you know, the mainstream looking guys,
right? The grays.
Yeah. And so I had three of these things standing in this trailer thing with me. It's as cheesy as it sounds, and I'm paralyzed, and there's three of them around me, and I'm like freaking out. And one of them was telepathically like telling me, like, you know, we have to do something, you can't move, just relax. And this mist, and it looked like fish scales, like shiny rainbowy fish scales, and it was this mist. And I assumed that was how they were doing medical tests on me. This mist, would go over like my nostrils and would go into my nostrils, and I could feel it go up into my head, and then it would come out, and I could see it again, and then it would go into my belly button, and I could feel it in my, you know, reproductive area in my stomach, and then, you know, it would go into my ear, and I could feel this mist all throughout me, and I'm sitting there panicking, and one of these gray things was like, you know, telling me it's almost over, just hang in there. And once all this ended, they left, and I'm laying there, you know, for like hours trying to like break out of this paralysis, and I'm wide awake. This wasn't like a sleep paralysis. And I remember slowly I started to be able to move my body, and I just sat there going like, you know, was I dreaming or what was that? And the areas where this mist went into my body, it felt empty. It felt like there was nothing there, you know, like it went into my brain, it went into my stomach, and it just felt like nothing was there. And I was just like, you know, I'd never even really told anybody about that. And a second time shortly after that, I was probably 18, I went and got a hotel room just to get away from everybody. And everybody knows that hotel rooms they have a lot of weird residual energy. Like I could walk into a hotel room and I could just feel like crazy stuff. You know, people go in there to do weird stuff. They go in there to commit, you know, they go in there to do drugs, commit suicide. There's a lot of weird stuff in hotel rooms. So I got this like cheap hotel room, and instantly I was just like weirded out by it, you know, cause I pick up on the energies. And that night I went to sleep, and in my sleep I woke up and I'm standing in the corner of the room, and I look over and I see my body laying there. And then I look over by the door, and there's like one of these tall reptilian looking alien things. And I'm like watching all this. I see myself and I see this reptilian thing, and I'm in the corner, like my soul or spirit or whatever. And I'm looking at this reptilian guy, and he's like so tall. He's got to duck down because his head's hitting the ceiling. He has a really small head, long arms, long legs. And he was like a dead pasty color. And he couldn't breathe. Like, it was like he was having a problem breathing our air. And he was really breathing real hard. And he had on a red flannel shirt and these pants. And he had the shirt tucked into the pants, and he had a belt drawn real tight. And I remember looking over at him, and I said to myself, if that guy's trying to disguise himself, you know, he's making himself stand out even more. You know, I'm right. Like tripping out on this, like, alien-looking thing. And then he walks over to where my body was in this hotel room, and I'm watching all this, and I'm like, holy crap, this guy's, he's coming over to my body, and I'm watching this, and he leans over my ear, and he opens his mouth, like, you know, 3 times the size of my head, and I thought he was going to put my head in his mouth, and he starts screaming in my ear, like this crazy screaming sound, and I'm watching all this happen in the corner, like I'm out of body experience. And I'm starting to panic, like, holy crap, he's gonna blow my head off with his screaming. And then all of a sudden I wake up, and I sit up, and the whole left side of my ear where this alien was screaming in my dream or out of body state was ringing, like bad, like someone had slapped me in the side of the head. Long story short, a couple weeks later, I ended up having to go to a hearing doctor, and I now wear a hearing aid in my left ear when I had perfect hearing before that.
And what did the doctor say? What brought it on, in their opinion, medically speaking?
He had no idea. And this was, and what was ironic was that I had to go see this doctor not too long before that for a job. They had to do like a hearing test and a bunch of these physical stuff on me. And I had like perfect hearing. And after this incident, like I said, I woke up and it felt like somebody, you know, I've never been stabbed in the ear, but that's what it felt like someone punched me and stabbed me inside the ear. And I went to the doctor. I didn't tell him, you know, hey, a reptilian in a red flannel shirt, you know, screamed in my ear and this happened. I just told him I woke up, and he said, yeah, you've got 60%, I have 60% hearing loss. I have the hearing aid and everything. And to this day, usually every single day, I get these ringing sounds in my ear that they go from my right ear to my left ear, and they start off sometimes really high, then they go really low. And one time this happened, I was talking about this with somebody, like I am with you, and it started to happen in my ear, this ringing sound, and it started to happen so bad, and it was so loud and so powerful that I started to panic, and like threw the phone down. I'm going, holy crap, my head, something's going to blow up inside my head, like, and then it stopped, and I felt real sick. And I was really confused. And the guy I was talking to, he was kind of like, you guys, you know, he's into this a little bit. And he was telling me that, you know, it's an implant and all this stuff. It's freaking me out. But, you know, I have a hearing aid. There was nothing wrong with my ear. And I lost 60% hearing in my left ear after this incident. And what else is weird is I listened to George Norrie one night. And I didn't start listening to Coast to Coast. I was listening to Coast to Coast one night with George Norrie, and he was interviewing somebody.
Coast to Coast, not familiar. Tim, have you ever heard of that show, Coast to Coast?
No, I don't think so. Coast to Coast?
This young upstart by the name of George Norrie? All right, go ahead.
He's the man. But what was weird is that I've never discussed this or heard anything about this kind of incident. And George Norrie was talking to a guy that was talking about a guy in a red, like a ghost or an alien in a red flannel shirt, that was out and about like around the same time this happened to me. And I'm like, holy, like I pulled my car over and I'm like, what the heck are these guys talking about? And the guy's going, yeah, it was like this entity in a red flannel shirt. And George Norrie says to him, he goes, yeah, this guy visited a lot of people. And like, it was around the time this happened. And I mean, you know, a lot of people laugh at Coast and think, oh, these guys are crazy, but I'm telling you right now that I don't know what day the show was, but the guy was talking about exactly what I saw, and he was saying basically, you know, a lot of people got visited by this thing, and it was in a red flannel shirt, and I'll never forget it. I see this like monster alien thing in a red flannel shirt, and yeah, and I said to myself, like, if this guy thinks that's gonna mask, you know, that he's 9 foot tall and skinny as a rail, and his head looks like, you know, his head looks like a bug or something, he's out of his mind. But that thing screamed in my ear, you know,
and left you deaf.
I have significant hearing loss in my left ear, and it's not caused. And the doctor was just like, I don't know. He goes, you were just in here a few months ago for your physical, and then he got me a hearing aid, and you know, I wear the hearing aid, you know, 60-70% of the time because I can't hear that good out of my left ear.
Right.
Yeah,
wow, that's startling.
Yeah.
Very, very startling. All right, Giovanni, we've got just a little bit of time here before the next Theater of the Mind breaks free. But I want to talk to you about black-eyed kids. You've had a lot of weird experiences. You talked about this kind of smoky, cloudy-looking eye visage of this phantom that appeared in the shape of your mother. Have you ever encountered black-eyed people? The full-on black-eyed, not just the kind of cloudy, misty eyes, but truthfully black-eyed encounters.
Not to that extent. I've encountered black-faced people. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but I've had encounters with...
I don't think that's the politically correct term, Tim. Am I wrong on that? Have you checked the Urban Dictionary?
Sorry. You know, I think we've all heard an Al Jolson record here or there, but yeah, other than that.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my mama. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Yeah, I don't. We don't say black-faced anymore, but explain this to me. What is a black-faced... isn't that what Ted Danson got in trouble for?
He did, very much so.
We don't abdicate for blackface here, but what is it? Maybe if you explain it better to us, we'll have an understanding of what the phenomena was like.
The people, humans with, you know, that are taken, I don't know if something's in them, but when they approach you, when you have an encounter with them, it's like they don't know it, but their face, their entire face, you can see their hair and everything, and there's just like, you know, the outline of a face, but it's solid black. I had two guys try to pick me up hitchhiking one time when I was 13, and out in the middle of nowhere in upstate New York, and that's the first time I saw, you know, black-faced people. Never seen a black-eyed person, but I was going back to the city, and at 13 years old, I was walking out in the middle of like nowhere, like it was just desolate, and there was houses like, you know, sparsely, you know, separated, and they were like a mile from the road, And I remember I was walking in this weird, creepy old, like, car pulls over, and these two guys, like, you know, like guys that are just living in their car, pulled over, and it was a two-door car. And I remember the passenger opens the door, and I'm like standing there looking at her, and at 13, the life I had, I was tough. Like if an adult tried snatching me up, he would have a fight on his hand, you know. Like, and so I was ready to run, and I had a house picked out to, you know, to go to, and I knew something was wrong. And they opened the car door up, and I remember the passenger, he didn't move, he didn't say anything, and you could see like a black face. But I remember specifically the driver. He leans over his buddy, and he's like this scraggly looking guy. They had sleeping bags in the back seat, and he goes, "Hey, you want to ride?" And solid black face. And I'm sitting there, you know, like going, "What the hell is going on here?" And I tell myself, you know, if these guys make a move, jump that fence and run to that house. Go inside of it if you have to. But these guys, these are not good people. They have black faces. You can't see their face. And then the guy's like, "Come on, get in. We'll give you a ride to wherever you want to go."
And I go, folks, no, just for clarification, he's not saying black people.
Yeah.
He's not referring to that. He's saying, and not somebody that's wearing like shoe polish on their face. He's not talking about that either. I just want clarification because I know I can already hear emails coming from Mid-America. "Dear Dave and Tim, I can't believe you allowed a racist to come on your show and talk about black people like that." That's not what he's saying. So just be aware of that.
These were white guys with, you know, European hair, and they had solid black faces, and then they were trying to get me into the car. And anyways, long story short, they ended up, you know, leaving me alone, and they probably, you know, sized me up and go, "Oh, this guy would be hard to get into the car." But I don't know if it had something to do with, you know, I know what they were doing. They were trying to put someone in the back seat and not let them out. And, you know, you can use your imagination from there. But it's like, I don't know if they had black faces because that's what they have, or if something in me projected it on them to let me know they were evil. But I couldn't see their faces, couldn't see their mouths. And it was, you know, it was just getting dark out. And I've never been able to put that one together because, like I said, I obviously wouldn't have dealt with these guys regardless, but, you know, something made their faces solid black, and it might have been like a protection thing in me, you know, like the clairvoyance that I, you know, allegedly think I have that did that to them, you know. But that's the closest thing to a black-eyed child or kid or a person was seeing those guys.
Well, luckily, we do have a black-eyed kid encounter. Many of you have asked for us to play this one again, so we're going to revisit the Dark Hives with this Theater of the Mind.
Once Bitten, a real-life confrontation with black-eyed kids, as told by Kathy Kay. I once had a black-eyed kid experience, and to this day I'm living with the effects. When I started college in 1999, I used to babysit for book and tuition money and had a family that I would regularly babysit for. The father was very kind and protective, but had recently been even more so. It would become obvious why later. They lived in a cute little house about 15 minutes away from my home in Quebec. They had a farmer's field and woods surrounding their property. On this particular night in October, I was preparing the kids for bed. We heard a knock at the door. The young boy was 7 or 8 at the time and was very helpful and sweet. He just offered to go get the door. I knew his dad would be mad if I let him answer the door, so I called him back and went to get the door myself. Here's where things got weird. They had 4 cute cats that would follow the kids and I around all the time. I had not yet noticed they were nowhere in sight. As I got to the door, one of the cats came bolting down the hall and started pawing at me and meowing loudly at me. I thought it was weird behavior. I looked up and couldn't see the others, just the kids in the living room. As I reached for the door handle, the cat took off as if I had sprayed him with water. I opened the door about halfway and saw 2 kids, a boy and a girl, both dressed very old-fashioned. They looked like they were from the 60s and had straight black hair. They said in unison, "Can we come in?" They never really looked up at me. They just looked forward. Now, I thought it sounded rehearsed, but creepy. I thought to myself, no way. This has to be a prank. What was this, Children of the Corn? Nobody talks in unison like that. I told them that it was too late. The kids are going to bed now. Come back another day. Just then they yelled, "No! This is our only chance. Again, in unison. Then they calmed down and said, We won't be here tomorrow. I still remember the smell. As I stood there, with the door partly open, it smelled like they had been sitting in rotten food. Imagine if you burned some stew and then let it get cold and rot. But it wasn't overpowering, just a hint of nasty smell. I know that I probably should have shrieked, but I calmly said, I'm sorry, but it's too late tonight, with my eyes open so wide. You could probably see my lashes touching my eyebrows. I suddenly felt sick and panicked. I reached for the door handle with both my right and left hand, with my right arm across my body, and the girl bit my arm hard. I slammed the door and yelled some things that those kids I was babysitting probably shouldn't have heard. I started to cry, as it was bleeding and pounding. I was both mad and scared. I flipped on the lights and ran to the living room window. I grabbed a hockey stick on my way past the closet and looked out the window. There was no one there. No one in the yard. No one in the driveway. They could not have gone the other direction because of the chicken fence they put up for their dog. The family had lost their dog just a few months ago and still had a 5-foot-tall chicken fence with steel fence poles. I imagined to calm everything down and get the kids to sleep. I told them that kids like the ones at the door are jerks and not to be friends with kids who act like that. That night I didn't study. I didn't sleep. When the parents got hold, I told them what happened, and the father asked me if I got a good look at him. I told him I did, and he asked me about their eyes. I nearly peed myself when I realized I only ever saw black. No white at all. It had never struck me. He asked me if they were blue, green, brown, or black. When I answered black, the mother started crying. The father gently hugged me from the side and said he would take me home after I got my bite looked at. I talked a bit to the father, and he told me that the same kids with black eyes had scared his wife. He had put a baseball bat in the coat closet next to where I found the hockey stick. I wasn't sure if it was a good thing or a bad thing that I hadn't found the bat when the evil buggers were still at the door. We spent the better part of the night in the ER waiting. When they finally took the cloth off my arm, it wasn't bleeding anymore, and it had scabbed up okay. The doctor asked how many days it had been. I said only 4 or 5 hours. He said it looks like it's healing fast. They gave me a tetanus shot and a rabies shot and shoveled me out the door, like hospitals here in Quebec do. Now this part gets even weirder. The next day I was feeling a bit sick and my breasts hurt. I was starving and ignored the light nausea and decided to eat breakfast, then brunch, then lunch, then a large snack, then supper, and finally a second supper. Now I'm about 5'4 and 130 pounds. I'm not a big eater, but I was starving. Over the next week, it was the same every day. I was so hungry. A bit of nausea, sore breasts. I had no boyfriend at the time and was not seeing anyone. So I looked up the symptoms online like any mid-20s girl. Now this was 1999 or 2000, so it took a while to find the info. No WebMD or Google to answer my questions. Everything pointed to pregnancy. I knew that was impossible, but decided to confirm it. I took 6 pregnancy tests over the next 4 days. All positive. I was about 2 weeks late, so now I'm panicked. What happened? I didn't do anything. As I sat on my couch and put my hands to my forehead, I noticed the pale scar on my right forearm. I didn't end up with pinkish teeth marks, but white marks. Kind of like when you get a tan, but some skin was covered and stayed pale. I went to see my doctor, and he confirmed that I was chemically testing positive. I asked for an examination because I knew it was impossible. He confirmed I did not seem pregnant. I went back every 3 weeks or so for a few months. Thank God we have Medicare here in Canada. I was not pregnant. It's been 14 years, still test positive, still no baby. I have considered a side business as a wet nurse, as I am up 4 cup sizes and have been since a month after the incident with those kids. The downside being backaches and an incredible appetite. The upside, I don't seem to gain much weight no matter what I eat, and none of my partners ever minded the extra size. But the sad note is my doctor thinks that I will not be able to ever have children. I've been in relative good health. No black-eyed kid sightings either. I hear of cancer, suicide, and all sorts of terrible consequences. All I got was a scar and sterility. I have had regular checkups and no cancer of any kind. I am sharing my story because only my parents, aunt, and one boyfriend believe me. And I would like to encourage others that have been affected by the black-eyed kids to come forward. Not everyone who sees UFOs or Bigfoot or black-eyed kids is a wacko. I'm not saying I'm playing with a full deck of cards either, but I know what I saw, what happened to me, and what happened to that poor family.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hello, welcome back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. And remember, the fun continues with the strange and supernatural. You get Tim and I every Saturday and Sunday with the best in paranormal talk radio. Then you can check me out on Midnight in the Desert, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. Tim, as we translate that into different time zones, help me out because I always stumble on that. So right. Then that is 10 p.m. till 1 a.m. Mountain time. Am I right?
Mountain is 1 hour less than Pacific.
Yes. All right. And then it's 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Central Time, which puts you at midnight till 3 a.m. Eastern Time. You can go check it out at midnightinthedesert.com. You can also subscribe so that you get access to all the archives of Midnight in the Desert, with the shows I've performed over the last month and a half, to the shows with Heather Wade and the originator, Mr. Art Bell. You get all of those episodes when you subscribe, so go check it out at midnightinthedesert.com. And speaking of subscriptions, make sure you check out Tim and I, my show, the True Crime Tuesday program, or just go to darkness radio.com and click on the True Crime Tuesday banner. It'll take you there. You can subscribe and be able to listen to the show. Take it with you wherever you go. We talk to some of the most fascinating true crime guests, authors, survivors, investigators. Plus, we always report on the strange and dumb criminal activity that's taken place in the previous week, and share your stories of I knew a murderer. So if you've ever come into contact with a murderer, either you escaped a murderer or you went to school with one or worked with one, if a murderer has touched your life, email me the stories, dave@darknessradio.com, and we'll include those on a True Crime Tuesday podcast. But sign up now for True Crime Tuesday, only $5, just $5, and that's going to be grandfathered in. So the price for you, if you sign up now, will never go up. Whoever is signed up now stays in that plateau for us forever, because that's the kind of guys we are, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
When the price increases come in a year or so, you will be stuck at that $5 rate. You'll never have to pay another penny. So subscribe now and take advantage of that program. It gets you 4 brand new episodes every month and access to the last 2 years of archives, so you can hear every episode of True Crime Tuesday. You can power through them, and they're 90 minutes to 2 hours long, and they have some of the most bizarre and unusual stories that we've been able to put together for you, and I hope you guys will enjoy it. We'll continue doing that. So again, brand new episode drops this Tuesday. Make sure you check it out. Today we're talking with Giovanni. Giovanni is talking to us about his lifelong experiences with the supernatural, and he has had a lot of them, a very weird myriad. It's kind of this interesting tapestry of different types of experiences that have happened. And I know, again, audience members are going to ask Giovanni, you've been through so much and lived in maybe not a physically abusive environment, but certainly one, and your mom having mental conditions, as family members and friends have told you, people are going to question the authenticity of your experiences, because maybe this is a genetically predisposed moment. Maybe this is what's you're actually experiencing. But I, on the other side, wonder if what your, you know, friends and family thought your mom was dealing with mental issues, if maybe she too was being harassed by the paranormal. Because Tim, you and I have talked to God, how many mediums, psychics, and sensitives over the years that end up self-medicating either with alcohol or drugs, mm-hmm. because sometimes they get overwhelmed by this kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So if that's taking place, I wonder if she was also the victim of this and it eventually just broke her down. It's hard to tell. It's one of those chicken or the egg kind of scenarios that's come about. But have you gone in to seek help from a mental health provider to make sure that everything is okay and that you're dealing with life and all of these strange effects? I mean, you could certainly go in without telling them you're dealing with the demonic or the paranormal, but have you sought help just to make sure that you're in a healthy place?
Kind of when I was younger, but you know, I have a lot of life experience in it. Like, I lived a very colorful life, a rough life, but I know people, you know, and I know myself most of all. I'm very in tune as an individual, and I understand how I work and how I operate. And I just never thought that I needed help per se, but I've kind of scratched the surface and have talked to a couple, you know, professionals, and I'll kind of test them out a little bit and see where I could go with what I'm going to tell them, you know, because one of the problems I've had with this is that people don't want me around, and not because they're being mean to me, but because stuff happens in their house when I leave, or, you know, weird stuff goes on whenever I go somewhere, I leave a house. And a professional or not, just because somebody has a doctorate degree, you know, I'm always careful what I say to people, because, you know, I've had people almost want to get in fights with me over paranormal stuff, just even talking about it. And when I was younger, and even throughout my teenage years, you know, I would go to like a person's house after school, and women are real susceptible and see things men don't. And people's moms would always like see auras around me, or weird stuff would happen. Pictures would fall off walls. And I remember one time I walked into somebody's house in seventh grade, and they had like these attack Doberman pinchers, and these dogs saw me and cowered down and took off and hid from me. And I remember the look on her mom, the guy's mom's face was like, whoa, like something, what is up with this guy? Long story short, she ended up not wanting me at the house, not because I did anything, because that day after I left, her pictures were falling off walls. She got electrocuted, you know, crazy things like that. And so, sitting down talking to somebody, whether he's a professional or not, you know, some people, you got to be careful what you tell them, you know. And like I said, I know I'm not, like, I know I'm crazy like everybody else, but I know what's real and what isn't, you know. And I don't do drugs, I don't drink. Luckily, that skipped me. And I'm just real in tune with things that go on around me. And I know, like, when a paranormal thing happens, I know the difference between a coincidence and something that is, you know, paranormal, ghost or something like that. I can't differentiate if it's a demon or a ghost or whatever, but I just kind of put the paranormal blanket over it, you know. Not very much help. I don't really reach out too much to people. You know, I've got a lot of life experience, and I kind of know what's going on, and I don't want to divulge too much about me, because it kind of puts a chink in my armor, you know, that people... Human beings are going to judge, period, no matter how professional you are. So I'm just careful who I discuss it with. That's why I would put a mask on, like I put a bandana on when I made the YouTube videos, is because of problems I've had throughout my life with people, especially their parents, going like, I don't know what it is with that guy, but, you know, there's something, you know, it's not him. He's there's something with him, you know. Stuff happens when he leaves. Like, I have an uncle whose wife doesn't like me around because I left one time, and my cousin, their daughter, saw, like, you know, the hat man with the red eyes at night. Their pictures were falling off the walls. You know, this weird stuff started happening, and it was kind of like my uncle indirectly told me, like, yeah, my wife thinks you're a witch or something. And so I just don't go there with a lot of people, even if they're a professional. You know, I know what's going on, and that's good enough for me, you know.
No, I understand. I but like I said, I know our listeners will be of the mind of, you know, sought help on this? Has he gone in for this type of thing? Because that is a concern. And I don't want people to think, and I don't want you to think I'm calling you mental or that you've got some kind of problem.
No,
but this is also, and just take this from the heart, please. I think you should also seek help for this reason. You're dealing with a lot. You're dealing with a lot that kind of pressure and that kind of experience through life. Not, and I'm talking about just what you've had to deal with in the real world can wear anybody down. And no matter how strong you think you are, sometimes it just gets to be too much. And then you add to that what you're dealing with the supernatural and paranormal, that could break even the strongest of souls. So I'd recommend just seeing if you can find somebody you can talk to that's in your price range and affordable, and maybe can give you some insights and ways to deal with this and deal with all of this, so you maintain your strength and stability. Because I would hate to see for you to, anything horrible to happen to you in the long run because of what you're dealing with. So again, please just understand that. I want to hear some of your other chilling stories, as I'm sure Tim does. Moving through your life, we've just been focused on you as a child pretty much and slightly coming into your teens. But what would you say are some of the most impactful and really kind of horrifying experiences you've dealt with?
Well, here's an experience I had. I'm 38 now, and I have kids, and when you have kids, something in you changes. If you're a normal person, as soon as you have kids, if you're normal, a lot of people aren't, and a lot of people shouldn't have kids, but if you're normal, something clicks in you, and you're complete somewhat, And when I have an 8-year-old and a 2.5-year-old daughter, an 8-year-old son. When I had my kids, things still happened to me, but I was more in control of it. It wasn't as powerful as it would be because I felt like I'm completed inside. I'm full strength. So now I deal with a lot of night terrors. I get visited by things at night. I don't even sleep in the same room as my partner, my wife, because I wake up screaming and fighting for my life. And, I think it's things visiting me. I've had, alien things, extraterrestrial things, ghost things. I've been told, in one of the night terrors that I had that, hey, the reason extraterrestrials are messing with you is because they're interested in your soul, things like that. But the scariest thing, when I really knew my life was in danger and I knew this wasn't a joke, was when I was probably about 12. My mom got this house in upstate New York in some kind of deal with these biker people. And so we obtained this house. It was out in the middle of nowhere. And you got to remember, this is back when there was no cell phones, no internet. We had phones and stuff, but if something happened and you needed help, it was going to be hard to get help. And I was always alone. Even at 5 years old and my whole life, I was always left alone. And my mom left me alone at this house. And I knew even before we moved in there, when I drove up the driveway, this place was haunted. I could just feel it. And one night I was by myself. And like I said, I was about 12, maybe 13. And I was in my room by myself, and it was late at night. And I was putting a model up on a shelf on my wall. And remember how people would flick pennies with their fingers and they would flick them so hard you could hear them go through the air, and if the penny hit you, it would hurt, So I'm sitting there putting something up on my wall, and I hear this, and out of my peripheral vision, I see a penny just smack the wall right next to my face where I was putting this model up, and I'm like, the hell? I know nobody's home, and I turn around, and there's nothing there, but I could feel the energy of just whatever was there. It wasn't just mad at me. It wanted to rip my head off. And it somehow got enough power to flick a penny at me. And I remember I tried to open the door, and the door opened to the inside. And then I almost ripped that door off trying to get out. And I ran outside, and I'm going, what is going on here? I'm going crazy. And then stuff started slowly happening at that house. I got attacked in the shower. Ran outside naked, cut my feet on the ground, crazy stuff would happen. But then when I knew I was in trouble, I was at that house one night, and I somehow had a dog. And if anyone deals with paranormal stuff, dogs are really good companions because they can spot and sense these things even before you do. And I had this badass pit bull / bull mastiff, and I took it everywhere with me, and it would alert me to this ghost. And one night, we were in the living room, and the dog was going crazy, whimpering, and it was the ghost was messing with my dog. And so we went outside, and I was out there playing basketball. This is at nighttime, and I would be at home for weeks at a time by myself, And up above the basketball hoop was a balcony, but it was a big area, a 16 by 20 foot area. And there was a rear windshield of an old truck up there. And whatever that weighs, 10, 15, 20 pounds. And it was moved all the way from the, it wasn't near the edge. It was moved all the way back, 20 feet back from, the where I was playing basketball. And I'm out there playing basketball. It's midnight, and I knew I couldn't go back in the house. I was happy the dog was with me, but the dog was acting real weird. And all of a sudden I looked up, and I see that rear window, So it was in slow motion, man. I looked up and I see this window flying through the air, like twisting through the air, like something picked it up and just threw it. And I look up and it's like in slow motion. And I'm like, holy shit. And my dog like runs out of the way. And I just made it out of the way. And this 20-pound sheet of glass just hit the ground and just shattered. I took the dog, ran, like I said, there was no houses for miles. There was no cell phones. I wasn't going back in that house. I would have called 911 if I had a cell phone. I didn't care if they took me to a mental hospital. And I went down and waited at the end of this road until the sun came up. And I don't even know, like, when my mom came home. But I cleaned it up, and I didn't say anything. And that's when I sat down and, like, really was just like, you know, okay, you're getting attacked in the shower. Stuff's getting thrown at you. You know, this is really happening. You're not making this up. And then that sheet of glass that got thrown at me. I mean, there's no one there, and I'm miles from civilization. And that's when I was just like, whatever's in this house is going to hurt you. And then we ended up moving out of there. And what I did when I was older, like 21, I found the guy who my mom obtained this house from. He was like some biker guy. He was cool. And I bought a 6-pack of beer, and I went to his house and introduced myself to him. And I'm all, we got that house from you. My mom made some like gypsy deal and somehow got it from you. And I'm all, when you lived there, did anything ever happen there? And he kind of looks at me and he goes, like, what? And I go, I don't know. Did you ever walk out into the garage and your clothes, the dryer would be open and your clothes would be strung 10, 15 feet all over the garage? And he goes, he shook his head. And then he started to tell me things that would happen. And I'm going, wow. And I'm like, what's up with that house, man? And he goes, well, when you guys moved in there, my mom didn't want me to say anything to anybody, but her boyfriend, right before, the reason they moved out, had took a 12-gauge shotgun, went up, there was like two parts of the property. There was a lower part and an upper part. The upper part was up by my bedroom. He said her boyfriend took a shotgun, went up there, stuck it in his mouth, and blew his head off. There was like a koi pond. And he said, we lived there for about 6 months after that, and he had kids, and he said that their kids started to, you know, like have things happen that I was happening, like waking up, you know, they would have bruises or they would get attacked, you know, sitting on the toilet or in the shower. And I'm just like, holy crap. Because like I said, it's one thing if this happens and you don't have an explanation, but everybody knows if someone commits suicide somewhere, I believe whatever state of mind you were in when you committed suicide, that's what the soul's in. And it's not going to transition. No one wants that guy. And he haunted that house. And I slowly saw him gaining power and momentum. Like, it started with a penny. It started with, you know, he would throw chips at me, just little things. And then I would be like, well, maybe it fell from the ceiling. And I could slowly, gradually see that, you know, this thing was gaining momentum and power. And it got to where, you know, like I said, it attacked me in the shower. And I don't know if anyone's ever been in a shower naked at night and something grabs on you and it feels like you're being electrocuted. You know, you don't have pride or decency. You know, naked or not, you're getting out of there, you know. And I just got sick of that happening. And then when it threw that sheet of glass at me, I started to take really serious precautions because I was just like, okay, this thing's powerful enough to do that. What's next? You know, light bulbs would go out, light sockets would blow up. And I think if I didn't have that dog is a warning, is a deterrent thing, something really bad would have happened to me. But because I had that dog, I mean, if I went into the bathroom, you know, to go to the restroom, take a shower, that dog was right there with me, and it alerted me when something was around, you know. And I would go outside and wait a few hours. And but yeah, that someone blew their head off, it's a fact. You know, I found out about that, and then I started to look into what happens when people commit suicide. And sure enough, you know, if you, anyone that's in that state of mind, you're going to be, that's the kind of ghost you're in. And that's what I was dealing with. And whatever it was, it hated my guts, you know. And that's when I knew that these things can hurt you.
Have you ever tried to communicate with them? Have you ever tried to just, you know, I know this sounds weird, but talk to them, find out what they want, what they need?
I have before. Like, the thing is, like, I don't know if you, like, everyone's had ghost encounters, like little things here and there. My ghost encounters, I've had so many of them. But the difference between mine and other people's is that they would go on for so long that, like, you know, like something happens and then you go like, okay, maybe I'm tripping. Maybe that thing fell over. Maybe this. My encounters would happen for like 30 seconds to an hour, like stuff going on, floating around, you know, noises, you know, toward you're like, you know, this isn't my imagination. And there's a couple times where I was like, you know, somebody told me to say, go away, or like, I'm Jewish. And somebody told me one time, tell them to say Jesus. And I've tried going, in the name of Jesus, get out of here. You know, it just didn't work. And to sit and try to talk to them, I've always been too scared because, like I said, you know, like stuff would happen to me that was like, you know, I would say to myself, these things are trying to hurt you. They're not. I've never had like somebody, I had someone goes, oh, I was visited by a spirit angel or something like that. It's like, I've always been visited by spirits of the Chainsaw Massacre. You know, that's the vibe I get, you know, like,
right.
You know, this is bad. And so I just never, like, I was never calm enough to try to talk to them, or, and this was, you know, back then I didn't have a tape recorder, you know, like I said, we just had house phones, you know, this is in the, you know, this is in the early 90s and stuff. And I just always was in fear for my life because I knew what I was dealing with, you know? And so I just know I never have, man. I've never, like, even now people go, you should go ghost hunting or anything like that. And to me, it's not fun to me. Like, especially like if you're with a group of people and you see something float across the room or you get touched, it's fun. But when you're by yourself, I don't know why, but like those ghosts or whatever they are, they're like so much more powerful than when there's a group of people. That's why, like, if you deal with paranormal stuff and you have problems, get a dog or have somebody around, because, you know, then it's cool when you see a chip floating across the room, or, you know, or a light bulb explodes. But when you're by yourself and, you know, and just the day before, you know, you were attacked in the shower by something you couldn't see, you know, you're dealing with maybe not a demon, but you're dealing with something that is bad. You know, it's not good. So that's, I don't know.
I'm curious if you could tell me, I mean, this life sounds like you are far from being charmed, almost like there's a curse. Do you believe in curses? Is that something that you think could have happened somewhere along the line, and that's why you and your mother have been affected this way for so long?
I don't know. Like, I'm really into, like, nationalities and ethnicities and race and stuff like that, because my dad is part Romani Gypsy. You know, he was, like, from Eastern Europe. He was a gangster, you know, and he actually had, you know, Romani Gypsy on one side of his family. I had a great aunt that was into tarot cards, and she would cleanse houses. And then on the other side of my family, they were Jewish, but they were kind of undercover psychic people. And I always wonder, like, you know, maybe what they did something or for somebody, or did a house cleansing and released something in there. And it's harassing. One of the things I think it's attributed to is, you know, this guy, Joe Hu. I talked to Joe Hu one time, and he told me, and I've already known this, he goes, you're an old, old, old soul. Like, and what that means is that, he goes, you've been, and I knew this, he goes, you've been reincarnated hundreds of times. That's why you get bored with things. Like to me, nothing impresses me. Nothing excites me. Nothing tastes good. It's just like, been there, done that. And I came up with, because I was thinking about this, and I'm going, I wonder if one of my past incarnations, you know, I had, you know, one of these past incarnations, I was somebody that maybe had a curse put on them, or you know, was somebody like that did something bad to a lot of people, because you can't control your incarnations, you know, if you believe in that. I believe in reincarnations. And I think either, you know, like I said, my dad, you're the gangster. The real, like, you know, I'm not talking like, you know, the pants sagging down and beanie. I'm talking like these guys were gangsters, you know, and he was part Gypsy and he was part Croatian. And like I said, they did curses and house cleansings and things like that. And so did my grandma on the Jewish side. And they could have been, like I said, they maybe did something that they shouldn't have done, because you can do that. You know, if you go and curse somebody, or do something, because people will do that, it comes back on you tenfold if you don't if it's not righteous, if it's not, you know, if you're just doing it just to spite somebody. Like, I know a little bit about these things because of my family history, and I looked into them, and it could be that, you know. But as far as, like, me doing anything, I'm not an evil person. I've been a bad boy, you know, like growing up and stuff, but I know I'm not an evil person. And a lot of people will go, you're into Satanism or witches and stuff. Just even the when someone even says demons or Satan, it puts me in, like, you know, like I want to fight. Like, I want to protect myself from that. And so I've always wondered, like, am I part of that? Am I evil? But I've had enough instances to where that's came up. And I don't even want to be around those people. You know, I just know that whatever that is, it's not, it doesn't go hand in hand with me. I'm not a choir boy, but I'm in the light, you know what I mean? And so I don't know. I think one of my past incarnations, if I'm psychic, like I think I am, I believe that I have some dirt on one of my past souls or past incarnations that, is why I'm open to this.
You might be carrying forward that karmic justice. Yeah, that's it certainly sounds like something. Now, I wish we had some kind of topical ointment that Tim could rub all over Giovanni to help him be. Huh? Well, that sounded a lot weirder than it meant to be.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I wish there was some kind of magic bullet, some kind of magic ointment Tim could give to Giovanni to help him combat these weird experiences in his life. But in that sense, Giovanni, do you feel that those experiences help make you a stronger person and a stronger parent because you're able to deal with a lot of this darkness?
Oh, yeah. And I've learned, like I said, I don't read anything about this. But I know that I have so much actual hands-on experience with it. Like, it has strengthened me as a person. And one of the things, like I was mentioning about having kids, some people shouldn't have kids. Some people should. And I've realized I needed to have kids because it changed something in me. But just, like, I know it sounds cheesy, but if you're dealing with any of this stuff, you know, even demonic stuff, you know, evil paranormal stuff, love, like true love, like not lust, but love for your kids, you know, like my kids, like whenever, like I've lived in houses that weird things have happened, and just like my son is just love on two legs, you know, it just instantly put, you know, throws a, you know, a blanket over it. And it just, I don't know. That's just what I've learned. But it has made me a stronger person. And I know that it's only directed at me, you know, and that's just something I have to live with. And I've been living with it for so long that you never get used to it. But I think, like I mentioned, when you have kids and you have real love, like you're a good parent and there's no bad stuff going on in your house, there's no drugs there, there's no people coming and going, it's just, you know, it's just your family, your crew, it'll fix things. You know, if you're like me, you'll never 100% be over it, but love, man, that's the only thing that you can protect you from, you know, flat out, you know, dangerous evil entities and demons and things like that, I believe.
You know? Were you concerned becoming a dad that these dark forces would get to your children as well?
Yeah, I was, because like I said, it, no matter where I'm at, you know, no matter where I go, if the house isn't haunted or if something isn't going on that was already going on before I got there, it's like, it's almost like this stuff walks around and finds me, you know, and I get visited at, like, when I'm in my REM sleep or when I'm, you know, when I'm by myself. And I've always wondered, like, okay, if I have kids, you know, are they going to be like me? Are they going to wake up with scratches on their faces or black eyes or, you know, like telling me, hey, last night something, you know, a hat man guy with red eyes was choking me or something. And I did always worry about that. But, you know, when I had my son, you know, things happen. But things, like I said, just when you have a little kid and they're playing and there's toys around, that puts an energy more powerful back at that stuff, back at those, you know, those bad vibes, those bad energies, those bad ghosts. And so I kind of noticed right away, like when my son was older and he was walking around and playing and stuff, he was in charge of his world and he projected something back at these things that I couldn't. And it really put the kibosh on it, so to say. So I knew right away he was okay. And I knew when I had my daughter and stuff, you know, the personality she has now and stuff, that these kids are, they're protected. Whatever beef or whatever things that I have attached to me because of my parents being bad people or past incarnations, it has nothing to do with that, you know?
So it's, right. Yeah. I would have a concern. I mean, I have a concern already because of the field we're in, having weird things happen. And I've been keeping people updated on my show, Beyond the Darkness and on Midnight in the Desert, with the weird stuff that's even happened. And Tim, this is something new I haven't mentioned yet to you. So our little guy, Max, is in his bedroom the other night. And while I'm on the air doing a show, he comes banging at my studio door. And luckily, my wife, Winnie, was able to intercept him. And he's very animated, very upset, and he's not prone to this. Again, we don't talk about ghosts around him. We don't talk about the paranormal. And he goes, something is laughing under my bed.
Hmm.
Oh.
Right? And I told you that we've been having experiences. Now, my wife and I have been around in the house, and the one day I was down in the kitchen, and she was up in the living room, and it's, you know, you've seen our house, Tim. It's not divided very well. I mean, you can hear each other really well from those two vantage points.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm talking, all of a sudden, a very strong male voice said something. And I stopped and kind of cocked my head like a puppy. And I looked up and I said, did you say something, honey? Even though my wife, as you know, has a very feminine, female, chirpy voice.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, no, I thought you were talking to Linus. I said, no, there's nobody here. But we both heard this voice out loud say something. And we've been hearing that more and more. We were going downstairs one day and we heard a voice come from the basement. So something is off. None of it feels very threatening or violent, but the fact that now our six-year-old is starting to hear giggling or laughing underneath his bed, that's a little bit unnerving to me. So I have those concerns because of the world I'm in and the realm I'm in, and I'll be talking to John Zaffis and going through my checklist of what to do to reseal the house and protect it. But I'm not nearly as surrounded by it as you are, Giovanni. And
yeah,
you know, as you said, some people just shouldn't have kids. I was just curious, was that ever a concern of yours that what's going on may cross over to your children? And how do you protect them from the unseen? Even though you believe you're in the light, these things still happen to you.
Yeah. Like I said, I have enough experience dealing with this that I know, like you have this problem at your house, kind of, sort of. You heard laughing, you heard talking or whatever. These things are everywhere. And my analogy on it is, it's obvious to me we have souls, and when you die, if you did good or whatever it is, you're going to transition, you're going to cross over. If you didn't, you're going to stay here. And so I kind of look at it as, you know, it's whatever's here, maybe not be, they might not be, you know, Charles Manson type bad, but they didn't cross over for some reason. And if you're interacting with them or hearing them or they're bugging you, it's not good. And I just accept that. And like with my kids, I just knew, like I said, when they're babies, you know, babies are pretty much protected to it, but you realize when they get to be 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, who they are, what they're going to do and what powers they have. And I just was comfortable right away with both my kids when they reached, you know, when they started to move around and walk around and talk a little bit, that I just knew they were okay. And I knew for me, like in my house, my son's 8.5 now, my daughter's 2. My wife is kind of a skeptic, and I don't really bring this around them or talk about them very much. But when we do, my son makes fun of me. Like, oh, dad hears ghosts, or dad is talking to spirits or something. And that's cool to me, you know what I mean? Because it's fun. It's you know, it's puts good energy out there for everybody. But if I start having like night terrors, like I said, I don't even sleep with my wife because I have really, really bad night terrors. Like I wake up to bad stuff going on in, you know, to me or inside my head. I mean, to this day, one of the things that happens to me is I get strangled when I'm sleeping. And I wake up all the time, you know, and so I don't sleep in the same room with my kids or my wife. But I don't know. I just know they're protected. You can just feel it. And I know that if something bad happens to me, it happens, it's going to happen to me, and I could weather it. You know what I mean? I've dealt with it enough to where I can deal with the psychological effects of it. I can deal with the physical effects of it. And it doesn't make me depressed or sad. And I don't see it as a gift either, because like I said, I'm not out there running around with EMTs and interacting and trying to make stuff happen. I try to avoid it. And, you know, I just, like I said, sometimes I've had to leave places where my family's at because stuff happens, you know. And as soon as I leave, things die down. My wife's seen it enough to where she's not a skeptic to where she doesn't believe it, but she knows stuff, you know, boogeyman follows me around, so to say. And if I leave, they're protected. And most of the time now, just having kids around and that love and, you know, all the things that go with having kids, it, you know, it projects it into my house. And I think we're pretty safe. And my son, he's a part of the Jewish community. We're Jewish. I'm not real observant. My wife is. And we've got relics all over the place. And a lot of people think those don't work, but, you know, when you put your mind into it and you have something like, you know, like we've got the mezuzahs and menorahs and everything, it projects that energy into my house. And whatever it is that bugs me, it keeps it at bay, you know, so.
What about the creature encounters, things that people would consider to be cryptid creatures? Have you had many experiences with those in life, and what has that been like?
You'll probably like this one. A couple of years ago, I lived up in the mountains of Northern California, like backwoods. Probably lived 30 to 40 minutes from a major highway. Like if something happened out there and you call the cops, they weren't getting there for 3 hours. But Mount Shasta, you could walk out on my back porch. And Mount Shasta was right there. It was about 85 miles from my house. I mean, every day, every night, you can see Mount Shasta from my porch. And I, of course, when I moved up there, I started to hear all the stories about, like, the alien space station and the Bigfoot, all the stuff that's associated with that. And when we first moved into there, we had a lot, like, we would hear stuff on the back porch. You're thinking it's like bobcats or squirrels or whatever it is. One night, we had these weird lights in the backyard. And like I said, you could see Mount Shasta the whole time. And I'm looking out there, and there's these weird lights out there. And I had this little rat terrier dog. I like dogs because they're really good paranormal alarms, especially little ones. And the dog was acting real weird, so I knew something was out in these bushes, and there was these weird, like, lights. They weren't, like, lights from a car or anything. They were, like, this weird bluish light, and they were coming through the openings in the trees. It was real thick woods and stuff. And my dog was acting real weird. Usually the dog would run out there and bark and act brave. And so I walked off the porch, and I went kind of into the woods a little bit just to see what was going on. I didn't see anything, but I've watched enough Bigfoot things, you know, to where they talk about the sounds that they make. And over where this light was, I heard this, like, it sounded like a baby crying, but like not a baby, not a child, you know, it coming from this real thick area. And it was like this screaming, crying, like whimpering sound that I've never heard in my life. And I've heard, you know, people talk about Bigfoot. I've never actually seen Bigfoot. Right then and there, something told me, whatever that is, there's something that doesn't want me out here near it. Get out of here. And I remember I bolted back into the house, and, you know, I told my wife, my dog was acting real weird. And that was the closest thing I had to, like, a cryptid Bigfoot thing up there. But, man, if I could have recorded that sound, it was something out of this world, you know. And like I said, I was 80 miles from Mount Shasta. And just weird stuff would happen, like, you know, all the time you would hear things out there that didn't sound like animals, you know, but I never saw anything, you know. And I knew when my dog wouldn't go out there that, okay, this is, because the dog would chase bobcats, deer, you know, whatever. But after I heard that weird crying, whining sound out there, that's when I realized, like, all right, you know, at nighttime, I'm not going to go cruising around out there. And there's been Bigfoot sightings and stuff up there. But that's about the best cryptid story I got, man. But it was, you know how, like, your body just tells you, you know, that fight or flight kicks in, that, okay, you're better get out of here now, you know, and that's what happened. And
What a life.
I don't know.
What a very strange and enigmatic life. Hey, thank you so much for joining us, Giovanni, and sharing some of your stories. Yeah. And how can people find you? What is your YouTube channel so they can hear more of your encounters?
Okay, I changed the name to my YouTube channel to The Spark. But if you want to look at my YouTube channel, it's www.youtube.com/C/ and then The Jewish Gypsy. So it's www.youtube.com, The Jewish Gypsy. And then my email is gypsyjew60@gmail.com. You can look up my YouTube channel with any of those. And
we'll put up a link for that on today's show so that it's out there and available. Giovanni, thank you so much for sharing your stories and being a part of the show. Tim, see, I enjoy listening to this. I enjoy listening to people that have had a lifetime of experiences, and it opens up. And I know many of you will say, I think this guy's just dealing with mental issues from all of the abuse he's been through. Some of you are going to say that it's the mental abuse and issues that opened up this portal to allow the darkness into his realm. I know there's going to be differing views on this, but it's certainly not less interesting because of his scenario and situation. I wonder how these stories resound with you as listeners. You can always email me, dave@darknessradio.com, for more, and I'd love to hear from you as well. And again, thank you all. And if you have guest ideas, people that you'd like to hear on the show that you think have an important story to share or interesting story to share, email me, dave@darknessradio.com, or simply stop at Tim's house at 314.
Dave.
Well, what? I know you get overloaded with emails. I just figured it'd be easier if they came to your front door and knocked.
Don't we have a Google phone number or something? You know, they can just leave their story.
Coming out. Yeah, we're going to be doing that next week on the show. And I'll be announcing it on our website and Facebook page, the Google number. You can call in and leave your message. But until then, just stop by Tim's house and tell him personally.
Dave, I don't know. That's okay. Yeah.
All right.
I get it.
Because you don't want people getting there and finding your HelloFresh box on your front stoop and trying to steal your good food.
Exactly.
I understand that.
Yeah.
So just call Tim at his phone number, 612-780.
No.
Well, they can't get your HelloFresh that way, Tim.
Right. But time is money, Dave.
Yeah. All right, fine. Well, you heard him. I've tried, folks. He's just rude and won't let you into his world.
No, it's not it at all.
I don't understand it.
It's easier
as loving as I am.
It's easier just to get a hold of me by email, Dave. It's just easier that way.
All right, that's it for this week's shows. Remember to check me out this week on Midnight in the Desert, Monday through Friday, and become a time traveler. You can subscribe and never miss another episode of Midnight in the Desert as well to hear 5 days a week on Midnight in the Desert, Saturdays and Sundays right here on Beyond the Darkness, and then join Tim and I on True Crime Tuesday. And you can find all the information about those programs by visiting darknessradio.com. Be kind, be loving, happy Father's Day, and we'll see you again next week right here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Rewards programs are a lot like pop culture. They can be hard to keep up with. But with Venmo's new rewards program, Venmo Stash, rewards are so easy because the more you do, the more you get. And you choose the bundle of brands you get cash back at. It's giving fiscal queen. It's giving star. It's giving up to 5% cash back at your favorite brands. Just pick a bundle of your go-to spots to shop with your Venmo debit card and earn cash back at them. Do more, get more with Venmo Stash. The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. Venmo Stash bundle terms and exclusions apply. Max $100 cash back per month. See terms at venmo.me/stash terms.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No